It was hard to interview Anson Williams without the nagging feeling that his voice reminded me of someone.
Williams has done a lot of things, from acting to producing and directing to starting a business that produces makeup. But it's a single role that endears him to millions of television viewers.
And so it hit me that his voice reminds me precisely of Patsy Weber, the hapless and happy-go-lucky character he played for 10 years on the Milwaukee set sitcom Happy Days. Williams has a new memoir, Singing to a Bulldog, is based on lessons he learned from the unlikely mentor he had as a teenager. Williams will be in Milwaukee today, but ahead of his visit, he's with us by phone. Anson Williams, so nice to meet you.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be on.
So it's been 30 years since Happy Days ended its run on network TV, and you have had a distinguished career that has included producing, directing, many other acting parts, and as an entrepreneur. And yet, on the cover of your book, there you are as Patsy. Is it safe to assume you don't mind that image that people still have of you from as long ago as 40 years?
I wanted to have an emotional attachment to the book. And I just thought, you know, that picture, I think, would bring a smile and get people to open it and to start reading that book with good feelings and a connection.
Absolutely. I mean,
the whole book is about connection. So it was actually a gift to be able to use that picture.
It is. I think when you say the name Anson Williams, it is probably the image most people have is of, if not this exact picture, but certainly a picture along those lines.
It's interesting. We've been fortunate, the entire cast, in being able to do so many other things. I mean, I sang Elmer Griffin 25 times. You know, had my own, you know, variety special through the years. Other acting parts, we go on TV promoting the projects we direct. So I think they're familiar with the character and also who we are as people too, because we've been around long enough to be able to, you know, to accomplish that. But it was interesting when Happy Days started. You know, I wasn't used to that kind of popularity at all, and especially not being called a character name when you've been called your name
right,
your whole
right.
life. And I complained to Ron Howard, and Ron said, "What are you complaining about? I got Richie and I got Opie." And then he said something really wise. He said that, you know, Anson, we have to earn our names. We have to do other things to earn our names. And that was very insightful and life-changing for me.
Well,
and I think all of us through the years, you know, especially Henry and Ron, myself, Don Most, we've earned our names too.
I think there's an anecdote you tell in the book about the four of you, or maybe it might be that Ron Howard was not there, but one of the first times you all went to a publicity appearance on behalf of Happy Days, and at one point Henry Winkler turns to you and says, "This was more exciting than my bar mitzvah."
Right. It's true. I mean, here we are, four young guys, you know, fighting for dates, and all of a sudden you're hot. You know, and when Happy Days went on the air, it was a very short schedule for its premiere on the network, and we were constantly working to keep up with the show. So we really didn't know the popularity of the show. We'd get to work when it's dark, we'd leave when it's dark, and finally we had enough shows ahead where we were able to actually go on a promo tour, which none of us, other than Ron, had ever been on anything like that. And Ron couldn't make the first couple of dates because of a previous commitment. So the three of us were flown to Houston. And right off the plane, we knew things had changed because there was a limo on the tarmac. We felt like the Fab Three. We're going, "Oh, my God." And we immediately from the airport, we were driven to the first event, which was some fashion show at an outside amphitheater in some park on the outskirts of Houston. So we're driving up there and, you know, kind of taking it all in. And we get to this, you know, park, and we're going through this long drive. And we see ahead of us just thousands of people. And we turn to each other, thinking, you know, man, something big must be going on. Must be a concert or something going on. Never thinking it's us. All of a sudden, they turn, and thousands of screaming teenagers, girls, are like running to this limo. You know, if you want to win any war in the world, just bring a few thousand young screaming teenage girls. You know, they will kick anyone's butt. They come down. It's us. It's us. They start. The limo's going. It was like Forrest Gump. It's Outside Experience. What are we doing here? They're almost lifting the car up. The police come. They're taking us out. They're tearing at our clothes. You know, all of a sudden we get thrown in the back of this of the inside of this amphitheater, and as loud as it was outside, that's how quiet it was inside. And we're just looking at each other, going, "What the heck? I mean, what the heck?" They put on wireless mics, and they tell us, you know, there's 30,000 people waiting to see you in the amphitheater and the outside amphitheater. The biggest crowd in the history of that theater. And there was this little fashion show going on. And we were just supposed to go out and wave. So they said, "We'll tell you when." So all of a sudden, here's, you know, three schmoes, Henry, myself, and Don, walk onto the stage, and the screaming was almost at fainting level. And we're looking at each other. What the heck? And then finally, Henry just looks at me and looks at Don and finally just goes, "Hey," with his thumb. "Forget about it. Forget about it." So I turn to Don and I say, "Hey, Don, I think we're going to get lucky." And that was the beginning of the ride.
Well, so let me ask about the book. You frame it with the lessons that you write that you gained from your stint working as a janitor's apprentice, essentially, when you were a teenager.
Assistant janitor.
Yeah, okay. Assistant janitor. It came at a time, you know, these were not the happiest of teenage years for you.
No, actually, my upbringing was harsh. My dad came out of World War II, and it was harsh. And because of it, I was pretty much a mess. I knew everything I did wrong. I didn't know anything I did right. I was confused. I was just so unconfident. And, you know, we didn't have money. So anything extra you wanted in life, you had to go out and get a job and pay for, which is fine. And I got a job at 15 years old at Leonard's department store in Burbank. And they hired me as an assistant janitor. And the head janitor was a man by the name of Willie Turner. He was African-American, in his 50s, illiterate, and a functional alcoholic. But without this man, I wouldn't be talking to you today. This man was the first man to ever talk to me, not at me. He called his janitorial room the talk room. And there'd be two oil drum cans in there and then janitorial supplies and whatever. And when we weren't working, he would talk to me. He had such an innate sense of who I was, what I was good at. He knew how to inspire me. He gave me life lessons I couldn't pay for. Again, without him, I'd be less than a number in the world. And the book, you know, yes, is 30 stories that are fun and entertaining and maybe insightful and maybe interesting to people, but there's always a bigger story in each story. It takes the reader back to the talk room where they can have a chance to meet Willie. They would have a chance to have the same words that inspire me to help me find myself. Like Willie would tell me, "Boy, don't get in the way of yourself. You don't get in the way of yourself, you know? And you don't look at the mountain. You climb the mountain, boy. You move forward. You climb the mountain. That's who wins, boy." I mean, lesson after lesson in terms of priority and clarity. In fact, the reason for the title, Singing to a Bulldog, that same first year at 15... we were unpacking refrigerators for the appliance department. And back then, the big deal was that the freezer compartment didn't freeze up. It just stayed cold. So I look at Willie and I say, "You know, they should put up a sign, 'Freeze your food, not your freezer.'" He goes, "That's good, boy. That's a gift. That's, you got the words to sell. You find opportunity. That's a gift. You use that right. That's powerful. You got a gift." It's the first time I knew I had entrepreneurial abilities. 2 days later, there's a banner across the entire appliance department. "Freeze your food, not your freezer." Willie had talked to the manager. they sold out of refrigerators. Do you know what that meant to me, this 15-year-old unconfident kid who's never done anything great in his life, to have my idea there for the world to see, and it actually was positive, it worked, it changed my life. Well, aside from many more lessons and inspiring conversations, that particular find that Willie found in me, years later, I used on Happy Days, always looking for the opportunity.
And so this kind of connects with where the book gets its title, right?
Back then, we weren't paid the same kind of salary stars are today. Nowhere near. We did fine, but you don't get rich.
Right.
So I'm looking for opportunity, like, on the show. How can I improve myself? Where is there more opportunity? How can I grow? How can I climb my mountain? And then it hit me. David Cassidy's singing on the Partridge Family. He has a record contract. He's singing all over the world off the show. The Brady Bunch, they're singing now off the show, record contract. Well, I sang in nightclubs and all that years before, and I thought to myself, if I can convince Gary Marshall to put a band on the show with me singing, I could get a record contract, and I can get booked for concerts all over this country, and I can make some money. So I tracked Gary down. He didn't have a lot of time, and he told me, hey, I don't have what? Talk to me later. I don't have a lot of time. I go, no, it'll only take a minute. He said, you only got a minute. So I had an elevator pitch to change my life. He goes, walk with me. So I'm walking with Gary, and I quickly tell him, you got girls on the show. You got cars on the show. You don't have music. You need a band. We'll have a band at Arnold's. Richie can be in it. Ralphie can be in it. I sing. It'll be great for the show. Wait a minute. He stops me. Wait a minute. A band. And you sing. Yeah, you sing, right? I go, yeah, yeah. He goes, oh, yeah, yeah. You're good? I'm okay. Ah. A band, I like that. I used to be a drummer. Okay, there's a show coming up, a frat party. I can fit it in the show. Go pick a song. Go to Bobby in the office. Go pick a song. Yeah, that's a good idea. Starts walking away. I'm thinking to myself, I just changed my life. I'm singing on national television. I'm going to get a record deal. Oh, my. And then he turns back to me. But Anson, what? You're singing to a bulldog. Why? Well, I don't have time to listen to you. If you're good, I get laughs. If you're bad, I get laughs. You're singing to a bulldog. So there I was, the first time on national television, singing I'm All Shook Up to a bulldog. But that moment of singing to that bulldog was more than just music. Gary liked it. He put the band in numerous episodes. I was in charge of the music that I did on the show, which gave me another responsibility, which was just a great education. I got a record contract. I started getting booked all over the country, and I made much more money off the show than on the show. So singing to a bulldog was the precise moment when I started to climb my mountain. Jump the Shark came from Happy Days. The precise moment when success starts to decline, singing to a bulldog is the precise moment when you start to climb. And I wanted the book to have that same inspiration for all the readers. Well, by reading this book and by paying Willie Turner's lessons forward, they will have the tools to start to climb, to have their bulldog moment.
Can I ask about the concept of jumping the shark? Because it's kind of entered the popular lexicon, and it goes well beyond Happy Days. In fact, people might not even think of it as coming from Happy Days.
Yeah.
Was there an awareness of jumping the shark as the shark was literally being jumped?
No, not at all. In fact, it's interesting because I think that was only the fifth season of the show. It went on for 10 years. So it really wasn't the start of the decline of Happy Days. The jump the shark moment for Happy Days to me was when Ron and Henry left, because the it factor of that show was the chemistry.
Yeah.
And you can't repeat it. That to me, the seventh or eighth season, that to me was the jump the shark moment, honestly. But I want jump the shark moment. I want singing the bulldog. I want the bulldog moment to be as popular as the jump the shark moment, because it's the polar opposite. It's the pause. It's climbing, not declining.
You met Willie Turner when you were 15.
Yes.
That's an age when teenagers don't always want to listen to adults. Was there something about Willie at the time you were 15 that made you sit up and take notice?
Oh yeah. I was in such pain, and I didn't consider him an adult. He's the first person that talked to me, not at me. And he healed my heart. The words he said just captured me. and turn my head around into a positive place. And every day I found out more I could do instead of what I couldn't do. Because of him, I had the clarity and the confidence and the strength to move forward. So, it didn't even dawn on me not to listen to him. It's just everything connected that he said to me.
One of the things, remarkable things you write about was your being there when Robin Williams was given the chance to play Mork from Ork in an episode of Happy Days, which many people forget, which then spun off to become Mork and Mindy. You say right away people recognized his genius. I was just wondering if you would reflect on a life cut short as Robin's was.
I can reflect more on his what's going to be forever. You know, I mean, Robin was the kindest, most gentle man ever. Maybe too sensitive to the human condition. And I don't, and a lot of times that kind of genius, I just don't know what went through him, what he had to put up with to have that kind of sensitivity and that kind of connection and that kind of clarity of what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. It had to be so complex. So I'm not about to judge, a long life, short life. All I know is during his life, he's given more than most people do in 10 lifetimes. And those 10 lifetimes are going to be around for 10 more lifetimes. His genius, his abilities to make people laugh and educate and understand are evergreen and forever.
Well, I know our time is relatively short in this interview, but I wanted to ask, have you visited Milwaukee in recent years?
The last time I was there was for the Bronze the Fonz dedication.
Well, I was going to ask if there is a picture of the real Potsy, if you will, with the fake Fonz.
The real Potsy with the fake Fonz. You mean Anson with the fake Fonz?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, sure. I'm sure there are. They took tons of pictures that day.
Would you wish that there were a Potsy statue nearby?
I don't wish it. I wouldn't mind it, but I don't wish it.
Well,
how about a gold one?
A gold Potsy.
Then I'd have security and the Fonz wouldn't.
Well, I have to say one of the recurring themes that comes through in the course of reading the stories in this book and the important events in your life is the ones who are most important to you seem like people that were generous in their time and their willingness to reach out to others. Mm-hmm. And it strikes me that you have been very generous with your time.
You know, paying it forward is what it's about, and I just, having had the opportunity to start with nothing and then meet so many fantastic people in this world, inventors, leaders, entertainers, but having lived long enough to know the most magical person was someone no one knew. And it became very clear to me that someone you think is so ordinary can be so extraordinary to your life. That's Willie Turner, and I try to live the lessons he taught me. And hopefully the book will inspire and connect with everyone who reads it.
Well, Anson Williams, I hope we can all sing to a bulldog. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Anson Williams' new memoir is called Singing to a Bulldog. Williams, who is best known as Potsy on Happy Days, will sign copies of his book later this morning at the Atrium at Schlitz Park. And with that, we turn the page on another edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Our production team this week includes the interview and mixing talents of Dan Harmon, web support from Michelle Maternowski, studio engineering by John Strelecki, and production assistance from Audrey Nowakowski and Nino Erba.
Have a great weekend. Hope you finish your holiday shopping, if you haven't already. And hope you can fit us into your plans. Lake Effect Weekend is tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 3 on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. We are your NPR station in Milwaukee.
It's 11 o'clock. Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next.